Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Radio Z Hour, an interactive talk show celebrating the written word. Presented by the Zahme Publishing Press, www.zahme.com. That's ZHARMAE.com.
Hello, hello, everybody. Alicia here, your host, on this gorgeous Sunday afternoon. The terrible, terrible Seattle weather has finally let up and allowed for blue skies. We had 2 days of freezing rain. Very random, but that's Seattle for you. Today is August 16th, 2015, and I am happy to be here for our episode topic, How to Build an Audience with Your Website. Now, if you have a website and you want to know how to grow your audience, you are in the right place. If you are thinking about getting a website in order to help build your audience, then you are also in the right place. We will be joined today with authors Daniel Pike and B.R. Sanders, and also our special guest slash co-host Kevin Marshall, the owner of BuyDomino.com, will be here to talk with us about halfway through the show and tell us all about building an audience with our websites. Now, author websites, I have always attested, are key to any author's success. It gives you one place online, a home base, if you will, for all of your fans to find you, to find your Facebook page, to find your Twitter page, to find your Tumblr blog, to find your Instagram, to find you and all things you, all compiled into one single easy to find place. All your books, all your essays, all your guest posts, all your everything is completely contained in one user-friendly space that just makes connecting with your audience all that much more easier. Now, if you haven't already, please like us on Facebook. We are so close to 500, and every week we are so close to 500, and then we get a few more likes, and we're still not there. So be our lucky number 500 or our lucky number 460-something. Please come give us a like on Facebook. It will help us out tremendously, and I will seriously, seriously love you forever, if that's not slightly creepy. But that is facebook.com/TZPPRadioZ, or you can just type in Radio Z in the search box, and it's dash the written word. Should be the first, maybe second thing to come down. But, and then, yeah, you will have helped us tremendously, and you can feel good about yourself. And you can reward yourself with ice cream or with another episode of Radio Z. If you like what you hear today, you can always check out archived shows. We have been here for over a year now. We've done 41, or well, I guess not, maybe almost a year now. We've done 41, this will be 41 episodes. It's quite a landmark. And yeah, I've been talking to you guys for a year, and that's well, almost a year, and it's amazing. So go back, listen to the old shows. Also, if you haven't and you're looking for some new books or books to add to your TBR list on Goodreads, then go ahead and check out firstreadsfirst.com. That's Reads with a Z. And, yeah, you can read first chapters from a bunch of the amazing, amazing Zahme books. And, yeah, you can just go on Goodreads and just click add like I do until your list is overwhelmed with Zahme books. Isn't that just a wonderful, wonderful idea? So, like I said, today's topic is how to build an audience with your website, and our first guest is actually here. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is B.R. Sanders.
Hi. We've had you on before, right?
Yes, I was on.
Okay.
I think about a month ago. Okay. A while ago.
I knew it. Well, if you would like to introduce yourself to the audience, give us kind of a about you, an author bio.
Yeah, so I'm VR Sanders, call me B. I wrote a book called Araya that Zarme published, so yay, glad to be part of the Zarme family. I live in Colorado with my family and two cats. I grew up in Texas. I currently work in education as a analyst. So when I'm not writing, I actually do like stats and numbers and things like that. So I'm like kind of a nerdy geek, no matter which way you cut it. I majored in psychology, and I have a PhD in psychology, actually. So like I have education out the wazoo. And other iterations of life, like before I was an analyst in education, I worked in labor organizing. So I was a campaign organizer with the American Federation of Teachers. And before that, I was teaching stats to undergraduates while I was doing my PhD. So just pretty much anytime I'm not writing about elves and fantasy and like that kind of thing, I'm doing stuff related to public education. Like that's kind of the long and short of it.
That's incredible. So I've actually read your book.
Oh!
So I can attest that it is amazingly well written. You
well,
are an
thank you.
Amazing writer. I think that it's one of the most well written books I've ever read.
Oh, well, that means a lot. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think it was very unique and very just amazingly well written. I was very jealous when I was reading it of your natural talents.
That's what we always shoot for as writers. Mm-hmm. I've definitely read books where I'm like, oh, okay, well, I should just stop because I'm not going to write that one.
So when did you start writing? Did you always know you were going to be a writer, or did it just kind of stumble upon you later in life?
I did not always know that I was going to be a writer. I didn't actually start writing until I was in graduate school. So I started writing. It was my partner, John, actually, who was writing. And I didn't start writing until he wrote this thing when we were in college. It was like, so we went to Oberlin College together, and Oberlin College has this thing called a winter term, and the winter term is like you do a project, you do like a month-long project, and it's like self-designed, so it can be kind of anything, and I always did like really nerdy things, like I'm going to design a survey and do it, and do scale analysis on it, whatever, but he was like, I'm going to write a short story. And it was this like ludicrously bad short story, because when you start writing, you always write ludicrously bad things. It's just true. Like you just, first time out of the gate, like anything you start doing, it's always bad. But we unearthed it. This was like our freshman year. And then we unearthed it our senior year. And it was just hilarious, because it was just all the kind of normal bad things you write, like the characters, like the sentence structure was like it sounded like he was walking on the roofs of houses, like things like that. And we were like, this is hilarious. And it's full of cliches. And we were like, and we kind of want to know what's happening next. So we were like, John, you have to keep writing this. Oh my God, you have to keep writing this. So we were pushing him to write it and pushing him to write it. And then we graduated and he moved with me when I started graduate school. And so I was pushing him to write it, but he, like, just was really slow about it. So I was trying to scaffold him to write it, and I was doing all this world building, and I was coming up with all these, like, schedules for him. And he was like, well, here, you just write it. You just do it. And I was like, I can't do it. I'm not creative. And he was like, you just do it. You've done all the world building and everything. So that's how I started writing it, is I kind of took over the project. And then I got really into it. So the genesis of Araya, and this is, like, over years, like, started way, way, way back there. It has, like, a germ in that. So it wasn't until, like, I had to get pushed. And he was like, you're actually really, really creative. I don't know what your deal is. Just because you also do numbers doesn't mean you can't also write. And I was like, nah, you're wrong. And now he's like, I'm right about everything, and you're always wrong. And I'm like, okay, fine, whatever.
So did you finish his story then, or did you write a completely new one of your own?
I did, actually. So it's published through a different press. It's published through World Castle Publishing, but it turned into a novella called Cargo, and it does feature that character named Jarthin. It's very, very different. But, yeah, no, it's found its way out into the world, finally, through many years and many, many, many different iterations. So many different iterations. But, yes, that story has been told now. So it just took maybe, like, 12 different revisions. Something like that. Something absurd.
That's a really good origin story. So I like that you, like, discovered that you were creative, like, when you were in your 20s or whatever, like,
mm-hmm.
already established, really didn't think that it was there and then found it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I really did have to be pushed into it, too. I mean, and now it's kind of like I trust that it's there, but for a really long time when I was first starting out as a writer, like, I had to write every day because otherwise I didn't trust that I could keep doing it. Like, now I can miss days of writing and know that I'm going to go back to it, but at first I was like, this is a fluke. This is totally not going to stick. But it...
Mm-hmm.
I definitely am not one of those writers who was like, I've known since I was 7, and I wrote my first book at 9 years old, and that was not me. I've been a reader my entire life, but, like, not a writer.
Speaking of reading, what kind of books do you read?
Oh, God, anything. I'm a voracious reader. So, like, I mean, I tend to, in fiction, I definitely have a preference for... like speculative fiction, just broadly writ, like science fiction, fantasy, paranormal, whatever. But I'll read just about anything. I prefer to read diverse fiction, so fiction that is feminist or is queer or has people of color in it. But again, like, I'll read the canon. I will read just about anything. And I read a lot of nonfiction, too. One of my favorite books that I read last year was The Ghost Map, which was about the cholera epidemic in London in the 1800s. It was fascinating. It's really good. But again, it's kind of like, just give me a book and I'll read it.
I'll keep that in mind. I might send you my book.
Very easy sell with books.
At least you'll read it. So what do you find the most challenging about writing?
Finding the time to do it, between having a full-time job, because I currently do still, I mean, and I probably will always have a full-time job. Right now I'm like the head of my household, like I'm the breadwinner, and having a family, I have a 4-year-old kid who wants mm-hmm. to play, like as soon as I get home. So between all that, and I have chronic migraines, too, that have to be managed. So, like, making all those pieces work, like, carving out the actual time to do the writing is the hardest part. So usually I ride on the bus on my commute.
So what do you find the easiest?
I think the first draft for me is the easiest. Like, that is... like, just sitting down to write the first draft, and, like, when I'm in the flow of it, like, that's just so easy for me. Like, I don't tend to get writer's block. Like, everything mm-hmm. that comes after that, like, then the edits and, like, making sure that I'm, like, on track and on time, getting back and forth with the editor and, like, all that kind of stuff. I have to find time to, like, sit down and do all the emailing and everything like that. But, like, actually sitting down and doing the writing, dialogue tends to be really easy for me, specifically. Like, that is the kind of thing that I don't sweat.
Hmm. is your favorite villain?
Just ever? Yeah. Ooh, that's hard.
Or you can list off a couple if you like.
So I have a very famous rant about the Chronicles of Narnia that I won't go into here because I know Daniel Pike is waiting to get on the show. But I've always really loved Jadis the Ice Queen. Like, she is a fascinating villain. And if you read all the books in the Narnia series, she gets more and more fascinating. So in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, she is just so badass and evil. And then she gets weirder and weirder and weirder as the books go on. And then you find out she's just like the last of her race and just like kind of fell into this world. I don't know. Like, she's fascinating to me. So I think she's pretty cool, actually, even though I really kind of hate the Narnia books as a whole. So I'll go with her for now.
Do you have any weird, like, or habits or anything like that you do when writing? You listen to music or, I don't know. I had one guy who takes off his left sock.
Oh, no, I mean, I think the weirdest thing is that I end up riding on the bus, like just out of necessity. But that gets you into some weird things. Like, you end up, I mean, and I look kind of physically young. Like, I'm short, and I have kind of a baby face. So, like, I get regularly mistaken for a high schooler. So, like, I'm on the bus, and I've got my laptop out, and I'm writing. And so, I mean, and if you take the bus regularly, you know it's full of characters, right? So, like, someone will sit next to me, and then they want to strike up conversations about what I'm writing. And I usually just let them run the conversation. But they're like, what are you writing? Is it for school? Which school do you go to? Do you go to East High School? I went there. This is what I go to. Like, this is, did you have this guy? Like, they just start going, you know? And it's not about what you're writing. Like, I did this. You should go to this college. Like, and I'm just like, oh, my God, I have gray hair, and I'm covered in tattoos. Like, obviously I'm not a high schooler. What is going on right now? And it's, like, 6:45 in the morning. Why is this happening? But, yeah, so riding on the bus, like, is – and then there's always the chance that you're going to sit in a seat, and it's mysteriously wet, and that's always super fun.
Oh, my God.
And then – you're playing that game of, like, is it alcohol? Is it water? Is it urine? Who knows? Do I really want to know? There's no open seats. Where do I go? What do I do? Like, so, like, learning to ride on the bus has been an experience. I have to say, I'm pretty impressed by my ability to continue writing, even though there's all these distractions. So... That's my weird writing stuff. Like, I don't really have any rituals. It's just sit down and start writing, even though there's everything happening.
All right. Well, Daniel Pike is here, and we can move on to him. But stay here. One time I had someone hang up.
Okay, I'll stay on the line. Hi, Daniel.
We'll talk with Daniel for about 10 minutes, and then we'll move into the topic. Hello.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
This is my first time doing this. what should I... how should we go about this?
First thing you can do is you can introduce yourself to the audience and give us kind of a rundown about who you are and what you do and what you write. An author bio, if you will.
Okay. I think it's kind of ironic that you've got two educators or two people that work in education on the show today. I'm a high school English teacher. I do that when I'm not writing, obviously. I write science fiction and fantasy. I've been playing around with that since I was in high school myself. First book came out November 2013, Wolf of Descarta, cyberpunk, science fiction. Second book, The Trail of Phobos, came out May of this year. And I've been writing for Zarmi since, I think, 2012 was when my first short story got picked up there. So that's pretty much me. I teach English. I teach college level English to high school kids. I'm actually going back to get my master's in English next week. I'm starting online classes. I have my master's in education and I have my BA in English literature. So, common ground, I guess, as far as the two people on the show today.
So, can you tell us about how you started writing?
I read a lot when I was a kid. The first time I attempted to write something was probably for a school fair when I was in sixth grade, and I was accused of plagiarism because the school thought that my parents wrote the story that I turned in. And that kind of shied me off of it for a while, but I had this really amazing teacher in high school, actually, in 11th grade, who kind of got me writing again. And I've always been kind of a video game nerd. I was inspired by certain video games during that period of my life, and I started writing fan fiction of all things, and from there I kind of made the transition to writing fantasy, and then I ended up going to college to study English, and I fell in with a particular professor who used to publish science fiction professionally, and the story that I started on that I eventually had published through Zarmé the first time was kind of my attempt at moving from fantasy to science fiction, because I was kind of under this man's tutelage. And I haven't really gone back to fantasy since, I guess. I have so much fantasy embedded in my science fiction that it's working for me right now. But, I studied English in college. I studied creative writing pretty extensively in college and got out of there. My first job out of college was in education. Didn't do so well. I was an on-campus security guy. I wasn't mean enough. I ended up teaching as a long-term sub, English, sixth graders, they were insane. I ended up leaving that position to work as a ghostwriter and editor for a couple of years, and then I ended up not liking the corporate stuff so much, so I went back to education and just kind of started pursuing my own writing, and here we are.
So, how do you find inspiration when you do write?
It depends on what I'm writing. I have to teach a lot of literature, so I've got a lot of heroes that I kind of draw inspiration from that I have to teach in the classroom every day. I also, if I'm honest, draw a lot of inspiration from pop culture. I am a Hulu junkie. I'm a Netflix junkie. I will binge watch shows for 2 days straight if I can get away with it and just kind of pretend to be grading papers. I hope my boss isn't listening to this. a lot of inspiration there. I read a lot of science fiction and fantasy when I was younger. And I still, when I get time to read genre fiction stuff, do it today. But mostly, honestly, if I'm not reading literature, and this is probably bad, I'm reading stuff that I have to read for work or stuff that I have to read for school. So I get more from video games still, more from television than I probably do from actual genre science fiction fantasy novels that are published today.
I think that's probably common. I feel the same way. I hardly have any time to read, but I, for some reason, have all the time in the world to watch TV.
Right, yeah.
I realized that as it came out of my mouth. I don't know how that works, but maybe it's because reading takes actual effort and watching TV takes no effort whatsoever.
Well, I was on, I have a blog post to coincide with this, broadcast on pikenight.com, and I'm probably a lot better in writing than I am orally. I have whatever phobia it is where you put a microphone in front of me and I run screaming. I was going over the idea that people don't read anymore. Like, it kind of came up in conversation, and people will read Facebook, like they'll read a Facebook feed, and I'm sure we're going to see some of this when we get into the website stuff, because that's what the post was primarily about, because that was more of the topic, I guess. But people will read a 140-word tweet, or 140-character tweet, but there's now an acronym for too long didn't read that's being used in Facebook. And it's like, we don't have time to read, but we have time to get on there, and there's something wrong with that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
How many books could you read in the time it takes to watch the entire series of NCIS?
That's a good question. I used to read really fast. I used to pride myself on reading really fast, and my girlfriend reads faster than me. She's like freaking Data from Star Trek. I don't know how she does it. It's like she's reading a synopsis and she's done, and I'm like, what? I guess. But I learned to read much more slowly when I was in college, because I'm always trying to analyze how the writer does it, because I was basically had that beaten into my head by a couple of professors that were like, read everything slowly, read the back of cereal boxes. You know, at some point you might need to emulate the back of a cereal box in a novel. Who knows? You know, so I don't know. I tend to read a lot more slowly for that reason, but that's probably not normal.
So, a couple more questions before we move into the topic. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Superhuman metabolism. Eat whatever I want, never gain weight.
That would be amazing. Okay, and then if you could take anyone out for coffee, dead, alive, or fictional, who would it be?
Oh, that's hard. You really got to throw that one at me. Anybody
that one
else?
Is hard.
Cliche answer, honestly, probably Shakespeare. It would be interesting to pick Shakespeare's brain. I know that's probably the answer that, like, any English teacher is supposed to give, but that's probably my honest answer. There's just so much there. There's so much you'd want to ask about, and I think that Shakespeare would find it hilarious that we consider his stuff highbrow today, considering it's mostly dick jokes and sword fights. But, I mean, if you boil it down, you know, that's pretty much. But we make a living teaching this stuff today like it's highbrow literature, you know, same kind of thing with Poe. Would be an interesting guy to have coffee with as well if you could get him sober. But I'm sure he'd be a little upset at the idea that his greatest work of fiction sold for $19 when he was alive and he died penniless, and we make money off of teaching him too, so.
Okay, well, now we're going to move into the topic, and in case listeners have forgotten, because we were hearing so much about our amazing author guests, the topic today is how to build an audience with your website. And here to talk us through that and all about it is Kevin Marshall, the owner of BuyDomino.com.
Hey, how you doing? Do we have a good connection here?
Yes, we do.
Awesome. So I was been listening to this to the show so far. Everything's so good, and you know, I was thinking about Daniel, and he did put a great piece on his blog about this particular item. I highly recommend that people would go read that to see what's happening, and a good thing, which we'll talk about later. So did B. She added something about this as well, just to promote that they're going to be out here, and they were both. Did great examples of using their websites to help promote and bring in more content. I just felt I had to mention that because I had done a little homework here. So just to mention who I am, I own a company called BuyDomino.com. We've been in business for about 20 years. We've got about 1,700 websites. We've got many servers. We specialize in custom development. But our primary passion is in marketing and making the web work for you. And in fact, that would be our tagline, making the web work for you. So I was asked by Travis if I would put something together on how to make a website bring more audience or how to build it, and so I figured that's what we would talk about. So without cutting things, I'll just talk about what we'll say. We're going to cover today about when I put this presentation together, who did I put it together for? Why is a website important? Setting up your website, we're going to talk a little bit about that. There are so many different ways to do that. I decided to take a single path and go that direction, and I'll talk more about that. The main piece of this topic is about getting content on your site, and then we'll wrap it up with getting the word out. That's the general plan here. So in working on the site, I wanted to make this geared towards authors, people who write books. That's exactly what the majority part of the audience is. And I kind of tailored it to new authors or for those that don't have a website yet, who are kind of moving in play. And but if you've got a website already, I'm sure you'll get some good information. And there's some solid topics here for people who have very large sites and are paying a lot of money to get them built for them. I also decided on this presentation to make it budget friendly. So we're going to try and get this all done without spending an arm and a leg here. So that brings us to my next idea, which is why have a website? When I was talking with Travis, he mentioned and he set up some authors that are pushing out the most amount of books. And inside, one of the authors was just running just Facebook and didn't really have what I call the home base or your website. And, you know, when you're thinking about why have a website, I think about back in the day when a lot of music bands and singers, they didn't want to put a website together, so they just made themselves a page out there on, and now I just took a total blank on what I was thinking about, but they
MySpace.
Went into a MySpace. Everybody went to MySpace, exactly. And they decided that they would put all their links out there, and now they even put MySpace links on their labels. And now you go look at those pages, and they're nothing but ghost towns. So having your website as your home base, it's going to be the main place where you're going to spread the word, but it will absolutely always be there. If you go with the technique I'm talking about, which is getting your own domain name and starting from there, as long as you have your own domain name and you're holding that name and you have something there, your readers will always have a place to go and find you. And you want to make sure that you're building this brand, and you want to make sure that every time you are out there talking or you put a Facebook post out or you're at some place or you're just talking to your friends or somebody is overhearing you, you want to mention that domain name and bring them back home. So it's a centralized location, and it's something that you have the capability of owning and watching what kind of content gets put out there. You have control. People think that they might have control of other aspects of social media, but they don't. Somebody could say something on your Facebook page. Somebody could say something somewhere else, and you can control what happens on your website. So I highly recommend that if you're starting out, get yourself a domain, and we'll get yourself a website. So, and again, I just talked about all roads lead to Rome. We want to push everything back to the site and use the site to push out to everything. That's the general, if you want to make a big wheel, you have a big wagon wheel, and in the center is your website, and all the other places you talk about are all about getting things to your website. So with a budget in mind, I was thinking about, how do we make a good website with very little dollars? And you're going to see that I'm talking, less than $100, and in some places you could even do it cheaper than that. When you do something on a budget, there's usually a trade-off. When it's cheaper, usually it's less convenient. When it's cheaper, usually it takes a little bit longer. But in 2015, I don't believe that cheaper doesn't mean it doesn't have to be as good. If you're minding the shop and taking care of yourself, you can now go out there and get a website, and I'm going to recommend talking about WordPress, that you can make a stellar website and it can look just as good as somebody who spent thousands of dollars putting their site together. The only difference is there's a little learning curve you'll have to do through a few things, but as I like to let as many people know, it's nothing that Google can't help solve, and we'll talk about this. And the little platforms we're dealing with, they make it very easy to put these things together. The most important thing, I think, when you put together your website is you want to make sure that you do it right. And by right, I mean what's expected by users and by search engines. We'll talk more about search engines next week, but certain people have an idea of what they are expecting on a website. And if you have a nice budget and you want to go try and make a statement and really push it out there, man, you can really do some phenomenal things. But if you want to keep it straightforward and get good results, I recommend staying with the proven trail that's out there. So WordPress can handle this need for you. And there's a couple different ways to get into WordPress. You have the WordPress.org, which is their free WordPress system. And then you have just regular WordPress, which allows you to pick up a template and put it on some kind of a hosting solution. I'm going to recommend the latter. While WordPress.org will let you get a blog up and running within moments, and I'm talking 5-6 minutes, you can get something going. A good evening, you could make something that looks very nice. You could check off many of the boxes. You don't have all the freedom, and you can't use certain plugins that might help you later. And if you decide to branch off, well, you could move your site from WordPress.org onto a regular domain if you want to, but I recommend just going right off the bat. There's not a big money difference in the whole play. There is
cheap.
A big...
It's totally cheap.
Excuse me?
It's totally cheap. Like, that's what I run, and I know... Virtually, and I'm sure you noticed this when you took a look and did your homework, I know virtually nothing about designing a website. I don't even understand HTML, and you can still put something together that looks halfway decent and set up a domain through WordPress that's, your own or whatever, and it's like $15 or $20 a year. I mean, it's not a huge investment at all. So, I mean, if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Are you still there, Kevin?
I'm here. Did I kill it?
Let's see here. Do we have some technical issues? Are we here?
Yep, there
I
you
am
are.
Here. Yeah.
Okay,
I am
so...
also on WordPress. Yeah, and I would agree with Daniel. Like, it's really cheap and really usable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Am I back? You can hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I was just saying, at the end of the day, you just want to make sure that it can be clear, you can get your message out, and you can read, because attracting your audience is more about what you're putting on your blog than the overall look and feel, as long as it looks palatable, is really, at the end of the day, that's what I recommend. So the steps, the general steps to do it, we're not going to cover a lot of time on this, but, you need to get a nice domain. And there are lots of ways to get domains. My company, we're VIPs with GoDaddy. I highly recommend them. But there are, Namecheap, or you can just go most companies, when you go do with the hosting like Bluehost, they're going to say, we'll get your domain for you. Just be sure to check out the pricing and check the 1 and 2 year pricing, because they will do everything to get you involved, and then they can come back and hike you up later. And if you want to, make a phone call and just ask them, if I get my domain with you and I want to move sometime, what is involved? I know that VistaPrint will charge you an extra $25 just to let your domain go. So I wouldn't really recommend going with them. Also, it's important when you get your domain, you want to get it for 2 years. The reason why you want to get it for at least 2 years is when you get a domain for 1 year, the search engines just won't take you seriously. So that'll help you out. There are very few reasons to get a domain for more than 2 years. There's not a big cost savings usually. And unless you just want to, you know, you're going to be there and you don't want to hassle with it. But the one thing I do find is that if you get a domain for 3 or 4 years, by the time it comes time to renew that domain, you might not have the same credit card, something might not be right, and you actually might have a problem taking care of it. Another very important part when you get your domain is make sure that you use an email address that is not the same as your domain. If you've got if you got foo.com as your domain name, you don't want to use kevin@foo.com because if something should happen to the domain, they cannot talk to you via email. So get a good Gmail account or something like that to manage that process. Also, whenever you go get domains the first time or any time, try and find coupons. So you can get a domain for $1 or $2 nowadays, and different companies such as GoDaddy or anybody else to be running certain specials. The next thing you want to do is once you get your domain, you want to select your hosting. There's lots of different companies out there that can host. And the hosting's going to cost you between $3.95 a month or so, all the way up to, you know, $19, depending on if you're hosting for just your own particular domain or you're hosting for multiple domains. And a lot of times you can save yourself a lot of money if you have somebody else in your family or you know a friend and you say, hey, I'll host your site with you. You can get together and you can host multiple domains in one place for, at the end, cheaper for everybody. Most people are running hosting. I think at the end of the day, the companies are very good. GoDaddy has a specific WordPress hosting. While we do work with GoDaddy a lot, they're not my favorite, but they do something run pretty well. Bluehost seems well. I really, really like Liquid Web. They're very, very fast, and they have unbelievable support. So if you're looking for help in getting something running, I'd highly recommend Liquid Web. HostGator used to be great. They still are pretty good. They have tech notes for everything in the world, so they also will help you, but they'll send you to hosting. And if you just want to go for flat-out speed and make sure that's being seen, there's a company called A2 Hosting that's out there. And all those guys fit inside there. They're $15 or less per month. But if you really want to get the A2 Hosting and Bluehost, they're around $6, $7 a month, and you can get some fast pieces. I don't want to take up too much time. You can look that up and find out where those things are there. Once you have your domain and you have a place to put it, then you're going to be selecting a template. I talked to Travis. I'll put a link out somewhere with a couple of different places that you can search. But if you're just going to be looking at doing a template, you can just search for WordPress theme for authors free, all separate words. And that's going to give you a link. There's a great link that comes up pretty quickly, which talks about the top 300 responsive WordPress themes. And you want to make sure you get a theme that is called responsive. That means that it will shrink down and work on mobile devices, because more and more of the audience today is, you know, they're going to find and pick you up, and they're going to, you know, check you out during their breaks. They're going to have their mobile devices. The other thing you could do is just do WordPress theme for authors, and that's going to bring up a different set of search results. It's going to bring up themes that are paid themes. And you really shouldn't pay more than $58 one time for a theme. There is a major advantage in buying a paid theme, and the fact that the support will be there. But more important than support is when you launch your website, you're actually launching into an engagement like you would when you have a computer with an operating system, that it has to be maintained. And good themes can run multiple generations of WordPress, meaning that WordPress is now in version 4. When it goes to version 5, a good paid theme can make the jump with one click and no hassles. If you go to a free theme, you might find there it will work great when you first get it, but 6 or 7 months, you might run into a problem. You'll go back and try and contact the author, and they won't exist. So if you got the extra dollars, I would highly recommend getting a paid theme to put something together, only because there should be somebody there to take care of it. And when you do go to your paid theme, I would highly recommend looking at how many people have purchased the theme. Because, for example, themeforest.net is a great place to buy WordPress themes. Not very good to find them. It's best to find them on Google, and it'll link you back to ThemeForest. But when you do get on ThemeForest, it'll show you that there have been 500 people that have purchased this theme, or 20,000 people that have purchased this theme. And WordPress themes, a single WordPress theme, you can build it 100 different ways, and it can look different. But if you've got somebody that's supporting it, 2, 3, 4,000 people have bought it, you know the money's there to continue the development and to keep the theme rolling. So, in general, you know, that's the idea is you get the domain, the hosting, the template. Once that's put together, now you got to start thinking about putting the main pieces of your site together. And I have a main things don't forget list. I wrote it down so that I wouldn't forget it. Seems pretty simple, but clean design and simple navigation, that's one and two. That should be part of your theme. And so when you get your theme, pretty much if you buy a theme that somebody has, a lot of people have purchased, a lot of that's covered. If you're getting free themes out there, it's pretty evident. Clean design, some white space, make sure that there's plenty of space to focus on what you're going to put inside of your blog. So then you need to make sure you have the next things I think are the most important. An About Us page or about the author bio or something that tells people about you. There needs to be a contact someplace on your website where people can contact you, even if it's email. Or you can use, if you're using WordPress, it automatically can allow you to put a form in there to allow people to contact you. This is often, you know, this is a nice way because now people can only contact you through your website. The one caveat with that is that if you put a form on your website, hackers of the world or just general people that why they want to go populate people's contacts form with a whole bunch of crap, so to speak, you know, it still amazes me. I mean, are you really reading it? Probably not. If you are running a WordPress theme and somebody does bombard your WordPress, your form with a bunch of stuff in there that you don't want, there are plugins that you can search that can allow you to remove that very quickly. There's also other plugins that will allow you to stop that from happening. The number one plugin that you can use is something called Akismet, and it's for a personal site, it's $5 a month. And there's another, and it's incredibly well. What it does is when they submit the form, it goes back and checks the Akismet databases, which is huge, and it looks for problems, and it just starts taking it out. And it has very few what are called false positives, where it removes something that somebody really wanted to post on your send to you. Another one that's totally free is the Bee posting system. So just do a search for Bee, like B-E-E, in your posting logs, and it's proven to be almost as good as Akismet, but it's totally free. So when you're thinking about your content, make a way. Sometimes it's easier just to put an email out there and lean on your email system. If you're using something like Gmail, it's going to cover a lot of the spam that might come in there. But people want to be able to talk to you, and we'll talk about also how you can build that into your blog as well. Don't forget about your social media. I'm sure that this is no news to anybody, but social media is certainly a great place to talk about it. But again, as we talked about earlier, social media should point back to your blog, and your blog should point back to your social media. It should be connected. It needs to be someplace easy, and you might want to go ahead every once in a while and put a blog post in there asking for people to like your Facebook page, to connect you on your Google Plus page, to go back and often to tell them you're reading your tweets and ask them to go tweet with a particular hashtag or something. But that's something that's going to help you. So you don't want to forget the things: clean design, simple navigation, about us, contact information, social media, and the very last thing is your prime content. And what I mean by your prime content, if you have books, novels, anything that's out there that you've put out that you want them to read, you want to make sure you put that in a separate space so that way they can read your blog, but then if they want to go find out about your last three novels, they could just go right out there and find it right away. That's kind of part of simple navigation. We don't want them to have to hunt through your blog to find out the last book you released, if we can put that out there. So those are the most important things. If I didn't cover it, your domain's $1 to $14 for the first year. Check for multiple years. Use coupons. Your hosting is $3 to $19. If you do buy it a year at a time, sometimes you can save a great deal of money. So check those out. I know recently I picked up an A2 hosting package, and over a two-year period I saved $150 just because I bought it. I got it almost next to nothing for like $1 or $2 a month. And then on your design, go search for these places. Free, don't pay more than $58. That's the top price really for a theme on ThemeForest. Okay, so now that you've got your blog set up, you put in the general ideas, we need to think about creating content for the site and for the blog. And this is exactly what's going to bring people back or keep people coming to your site. So I mentioned WordPress for a reason. WordPress is primarily a blog. And the definition of a blog is something that you can write posts on and allow people to write back to you. And that's important. If you just put together a blog and you don't allow people to post to you, you're missing out on a big deal of traffic. So the idea is the blog connects to your readers. It gives them a string to remind them when this is going to happen. And it lets them, you know, actually go back and publish and say their words to it. You want to make sure that you keep it fresh and keep it consistent. You can update your blog whenever you think is right, but it's best if you keep a posting schedule and try to announce it. And if you announce it, then stick to it. So by make no mistake, setting up a website and creating a blog, you are creating a task, like a little mini job to support your, you know, your authorship and writing. I think it's one of the best things you can do, and you can get a great deal of feedback from your readers. If you keep things together, meaning that you know, constant posting efforts, you're going to attract more readers. When you do write your posts, you want to go around and you want feedback. So figure out clever ways when you're writing a post to actually attract feedback back from your listeners. Say, hey, you know, do you have any good ways to do this? I was thinking about this. What do you think about it? That's going to actually get you more response back. And we're going to talk more about SEO later next week, but that's a huge difference. Blogs that actually have feedback are much stronger than blogs that do not. And when you respond to your feedback, wow, great things happen, because this blog is about you. It's all about you. Readers are coming to see your works, and they want to know about you. And when you come in and you write, you're in your own little audience. It's like the star coming in. Everybody wants to see you and see what you have to say. That's why they're coming. So responding back to the feedback that people write to you almost is more important than actually the actual post. And I'm sure that people, you know, you use the internet, you're on there looking at things. Many times the answers you're looking for are inside the thread of posts and feedbacks that are below the original article. So that's super important to do it. And if you're posting once a week or twice a week, push for feedback, respond to it. And the nice thing about WordPress is in the back end, it will tell you what's happening and what you can respond to. So you don't have to actually read through everything all the time. I think that you need to handle your blog like the important task that it is. So it's a responsibility, and if you want to get more readers, you have a responsibility to them to give them what they're looking for. And you can find that out as you're doing it, but I think that once a day, checking it out is certainly something you can do. I see so many people looking at Facebook, and the nice thing, again, I mentioned about getting your blog, so it's responsive. You can do all this work on your cell phone or on the bus or on the train when you're writing something there. So try to keep it engaged. What do you put in your blog? That's some people ask. I think obviously any books or any ideas or new publications that you're going to put out, any publicity that is on your books. If there's somebody wrote something, if the Zarma Press put something else on your book, you have your own post about your book, but then you start another day, you say, hey, check out what Zarma wrote and give us some feedback on that. Again, we're trying to create feedback on there. So at the end of the day, we want people to read our works, and we want to push for that to happen. The other thing, random musings. What's your thought you're thinking about today? New ideas, cool stuff, or things that interest you, or link to other people's work that you find interesting. I found that, in doing this, Alicia always asks, who's your favorite villain to everybody? Well, maybe you should talk about your favorite villain and start a thread on it somewhere and ask them what they think their favorite villain is. Should they, that way they're going to be prepared if they ever get on the show and talk to Alicia. So, but that's something you can talk about. You can also add in humor, but be careful with everything you put in your blog, because this is a reflection of you. And what you put on your blog is written, it's stored, it's captured by multiple servers, and you might put it somewhere and try and hide it and remove it. Hopefully it will go away, but it's cached for some period of time. So don't go out and have a plaster and then start blogging on your system. I mean, don't do that. So be careful what you say, but do things that are interesting. And I would highly recommend when you first get your blog going, or if you have an existing blog going, put something out there that says, what would you like to hear about? Do your own little survey, because that'll help you become very strong. You can add short story. I think that's an awesome way. There is one of the Zarma writers, Gerald Beckman. He has short stories on his blog. It's a very straightforward, simple blog. It's written in WordPress, but he's got these short stories that maybe he's writing those in between larger, works that he's putting together, and that certainly is going to get some feedback. But if you're going to do something like that, tantalize them a little bit. Tell them, hey, I got this new short story. We're going to put it out there next week. Get them guessing on certain things. If your blog becomes interactive, it will become incredibly successful. And you can have some fun doing that and making that happen. So if you're putting other works of art, the other works out there that you're able to write, readers are going to want to be interested in that. They're going to see your style. They're going to start to learn more about you, and they're going to look forward for the next book that you put out. Put out lots of pictures. When I say lots of pictures, I don't mean put out hundreds of them, but pictures make a connection, especially if they have faces. Just make sure that any pictures you put out are professional, they look clear, and watch out for backgrounds. Because people oftentimes you'll see pictures on the internet of somebody, and in the back there's something that's just not right. So check for those out. But I think when you put on a picture, don't just put a picture, embed it into a blog and write about it and give a story behind it. And then, what do you think? Here's a picture of me, my first time water skiing. Did you remember your first time water skiing? Do you want to water ski? Again, we're asking for more feedback, which is going to create interactivity, which is going to make our blog more successful. So those are some good ideas on what to put in your blog. We've covered pretty much, how to get a blog going, what to put on it, the most important things we got to have on it. We skipped one. I'll cover it now as I'm thinking about it. We didn't talk about your brand. A lot of people, your brand might just be your name. It might be your name in a particular font or something out there. If I look at, Daniel just got, Pike Knight out there. That's it. The brand for B is Clatter and Clank. So, you know, there's some connections out there. And then whenever she puts her name out, or whenever they put their name out, it has a pronunciation. It says who they are. So it's always connecting. And the brand is important to keep everybody together. So during that list, I should have put together the must-have list. I forgot to add branding. So once we have this out, we have our site put together, we need to think about how we're going to get the word out. Now, this is different than SEO, or it's a part of marketing, but these are actually mechanisms that you can use. They do help SEO, but there's some really good things here that you can do for nothing, zero money, which is, I think a lot of people like zero money. Two of the best ways you can get the word out is through making a mail list and using your social media. And my two tips here is in your mail list, it doesn't have to be expensive or difficult. If you're collecting a mail list for somebody, you can let them know that you'll let them know when you have new things out there, and you can tell them when things are happening. You can also, when you put out a mailer, you can just take a blog post and push that blog post out on your mailer and send it out. But MailChimp, it gives you the first 2,000 subscribers for free. So you can go out and get a MailChimp account, connect it to your WordPress blog, and spend no money. And you can send it out like 5 or 6 times a month if you wanted to, which is more than plenty. If you get over 2,000 subscribers, you should be able to find a way to afford the $19.95 a month that they're going to charge you for that. There is somewhere said that on a mail list, for every person you have on your list, it's worth $1 a month if you can think about monetizing it. So it's not a discussion on monetizing these issues, but it's just I wanted to put that out there. But first 2,000 people on MailChimp, there's almost no reason why somebody shouldn't put out some kind of mailing list to help push out their, get their word out. The second thing is in your social media, you know, you want to pick out the social media accounts that are important, that people are really looking at. You know, Facebook, because you're individual authors, LinkedIn is an excellent place to connect up with, and then Twitter. Those are the top three. When we talk about social media, or I mean, we talk about SEO, we'll talk about the importance of Google+. While Google doesn't, they have a huge share of people, but not a lot of people are watching them, they still think it's important, so Google Plus becomes important. But if we're just going to talk about Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, you can use a tool called Hootsuite, spelled H-O-O-T-S-U-I-T-E, for free. It'll let you have 3 accounts, and this allows you to write your blog, then put a post out through Hootsuite that will put it on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn all at the same time so you can reduce the amount of time you're spending to push your word out there. So that makes it super easy to do that, and I would not know anybody else, any other reasons why you wouldn't want to do that. So this is basically get your website together, make it look nice, put some good posting, get the word out a little bit there. That would be put down at the end of this particular discussion. Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, I was going to say we should just open the floor up for questions. I actually have one. After doing all this, what kind of numbers can you expect for their website? How many hits do you think?
Well, every website's different, and different websites work for different things. And also, you're a big component of your website. The more you talk about it, the more it's going to come to life. To get the best numbers, WordPress actually has some analytics, but you would highly recommend putting on Google Analytics to see exactly what kind of traffic that is coming. And if you're going to add Google Analytics, you're going to want to add webmaster tools to help build that. But depending on if you're just starting, you know, I was listening the other day to an author that, you know, he was 19, he just put out his first book. If he had his website put together and he puts his book out there and he posts that he's got this going, if he's got 100 friends on Facebook, he's going to get 100 hits on his website and people are going to look at it fairly quickly. So depending on how well you're connected, if you're just starting and nobody knows you, you're going to put it out there and nobody's going to know you. This is very much not like if you build it, they will come. I mean, that's a great movie and everything. That's not exactly how it works. So you've got to build it and then start pushing it out there. So I would recommend that you get analytics and that you would find out, okay, right now I've got 30 people that are visiting the site regularly. I try and push that out. I push out something on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn to try to get more people to be engaged. You could also tease people by saying, hey, on Facebook, I'm going to come out with a new item here. It's a short story. It's announcing a new book I'm putting there. You could build that up over 5 or 6 or 7 days and then post it on your book, and you'll see these building blocks. In Daniel's write-up that he put up, he mentioned the whole Monday, Tuesday. If you post on Mondays, people tend to start looking on Tuesdays. This is very common, so you'll get higher traffic. To give you an example, we have a website we put out there. I started with a guy 2.5 years ago. He started running. Before he had a mailing list, he was getting 10 to 20 people a day. He started pushing it on Facebook and LinkedIn. He built that up to 100 to 200 a day. He started getting a mailing list, and he was getting 200 or 300, 400 people a day. And, you know, now he's getting several thousand people a day. And when he puts a post out there, people listen. And if you stay engaged, then you'll see that growth. So I would say don't get discouraged. Find other ways, because if you're a writer, you're going to write books that you want people to read. And if you want to make sure people are reading your books, you want to get them back to your website in order to find out new things you're going to write. I hope that answers it. It's very hard to say, well, if you put it out there, you're going to get 1,000 people. That's probably not going to happen.
Okay.
Does that help?
Anybody else have questions? Yeah. That was kind of what I was going for, an explanation of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. I've got some traffic on there, but as you probably saw from reading my post, my initial subscribers that brought me a lot of the numbers that I have are not necessarily geared into the genre that I'm writing in now. And I know that you brought up the idea of like a mailer or whatnot, but how do you, and I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but how do you reach people that are actually interested in what it is that you're writing or what your brand is besides just the tagging and the SEO stuff, which has not worked in my favor so far?
Well, the tagging and the SEO stuff, you know, this kind of talks more what we'll talk about next week, but when you look about SEO and marketing your site, 25% of what you do on your website is the equation, and 75% is what you do off the site is important. So you got a 25-75% ratio. That being said, though, the 25% you put on your site is crucial. It's not there, it's not going to work. So what you would do, I would recommend, there is a forum or a place or a community for almost anything on the internet. So I would try to search what you're looking for, find other writing that writers that people are doing something similar to you, and then find out places where people are posting, even on other people's blogs. And sometimes guest posting works really well, or guests or talking in a community to get people to come over. When you do that, you don't want to just come over and say, hey, listen, this is great. We're dealing with science fiction. Come look at my blog. It's great. You know, establish a relationship, get a rapport, get at least, you know, 10 or so posts in play, and then you can start mentioning people about, hey, I'm interested in this. I've got a little blog I'm thinking about here. I've been writing. What do you think about it? And that's one of the best things. What do you think about what I've done? And then you send them to something, and hopefully you've written a post that mentions something that pulls more people to ask more questions, and you can start that play back and forth. So the only way really to get more people to come to your site is, you know, once they come to your site, that's great. You can keep them, and that's what this discussion was about, is to go out to other places where they might linger and try to befriend those places and then send them back to your place. That's kind of what ads do. They put them out, those ads. They keep them around. People get used to seeing them until finally they wonder, what the heck is that? And they click on it to go see what's going on. Does that help?
Yeah, that helps. I mean, I've spent some money on ads, even on Goodreads, and I didn't see what that did. On Goodreads, it's a social media site for readers. I didn't see that helped very much. I've tried Raffles on Goodreads, giving away free books. I didn't see that that helped terribly much. I know that one thing that has helped get Twitter followers, and I don't know if this can be tied directly to WordPress, is Amazon.com now has a pretty easy way to give away a book and do a random raffle, and you can basically have them like your content or follow your content in order to be entered in that raffle, and from there you can build up some subscribers. I don't know how long they stick when they're in a raffle situation like that, and of course that's money. I mean, a lot of the big stuff, it kind of seems like you've got to drop a dime in order to get it done. So
yeah, and that does seem to be true, but at the end of the day, a lot of times the money, a little bit of legwork, which again converts to time, which also converts to money, it pulls that into place. And I would say that the raffle piece works a lot like specials that are put on the internet. People, they follow it, then they as soon as the special's gone, they're gone. They're off to the next thing.
Right.
So the trick there is that when you do have somebody coming back, if they're just following for to try and get the prize, the free T-shirt, that's not really your audience you're looking for. In fact,
no.
A lot of people in the marketing business, they will say, my goal every time I send out something on my mailing list is to get people to unsubscribe. And what they mean by that is they just want buyers. And these are people that are just, you know, if they want 1,000 people and all those people buy, they're good to go. They'd rather have 1,000 buyers than 80,000 people that a very small fraction buy. So you could convert that to people that are reading and contributing back to your site. And a lot of people, they will contribute very little, but they might follow along and be interested in what other people are contributing. So what I would recommend, again, is anytime you put any kind of effort, make sure you don't just do that spur of the moment. There's some planning involved on your site to make sure that when they do come visit, you're putting your best foot forward to try to bring something else to continue the effort. And that's where, you know, you could put a mailing list out there where you're doing a listing saying, hey, we're going to put down the word of the day or the word of the week. We're going to talk about it. It's going to convert that into a small story. I'm making all this up right now. And the only way you're going to get that is by subscribing to my list. And now that gives people a little bit more mystery where they might want to come to it. And if you put that at the same time where you have done an effort to bring more visitors, maybe it's just a raffle, there's other things that are there, that might make you retain more visitors. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is B. So
Hi, B. This
has been fascinating. I've been blogging for a while now. I was blogging before because I read on the internet that, like, if you wanted to publish, you had to have a platform and, like, all this stuff. So, like, I started, like, my blog before I started publishing. So, like, I just wanted to throw out there that, like, I found that my audience for my blog has changed a lot over the course of my blog. I've been blogging since, I think, like, 2012-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been – I found that, like I've been doing a lot of the things you're saying. And, like, in, the last couple of months, I've been, like, really hammering hard, like, a specific blogging schedule, and that's been working really well. But finding, like, the specific audience that I'm plugging into has been going really well for me, and I'm seeing a lot of growth on my blog for that. So figuring out,
well,
like,
you got 700, you got 754 email followers.
I do, yeah, which is nice.
Yeah,
I mean,
awesome.
Like, that's not, like, that's a drop in the bucket compared to a lot of other people, but that's nice for me. So
sometimes
I'm pleased with that.
You know.
But yeah, so, like, plugging into, like, networks of people, like, my books are very, like, I'm finding that they're appealing to a particular set of readers that are interested in themes related to diversity and queer representation and things like that. And I'm finding those readers on Twitter and then linking them back to the website. So all the things that you're articulating about, like, find them one place and then link them back to your website, and, like, doing that kind of circular movement through blog posts and that kind of thing. And I'm finding them and, like, offering interviews with other writers that do that kind of thing and tapping into their networks, and they're tapping into mine. And it's been really, really, really useful. So, like, I think figuring out who your population is, like, who your audience is, and then zeroing in on that has been really useful for me. But I will say that, like, with the release of my book, it's been a really different audience than the one that my blog kind of grew up with. Right. So knowing that has been a challenge.
Right. Now, are you not allowing people to post or comment on your – you can post and comment on your blog. You're getting some feedback. I was looking at some of the pieces on your some of your threads that you're putting out there, and you're not you have these great connected discussions, but you're not asking for that feedback. And I think that would be huge for you. You get 1,000 people around a blog, and people start feeding back at each other. You'd be surprised how much that's going to change. And what you could do also is say, hey, if you like what you're reading, please post this on your Facebook or your Twitter. And there's nothing wrong with asking this. Say, hey, if you really like what's going on there, the best thing you can do for me is to post this out someplace else. Because remember, when they go to your Facebook and they like you, a little thing gets mentioned on their wall they start doing. But if they post in their wall, all their readers see it. And you can also coach them a little bit saying, hey, ask your readers what they think about this type of book that we're reading or something there, because if they post, then it goes on all their friends. And so you could actually get – you could take 10,000 – or, I mean, 1,000 people that are very interested in what you're doing. And if you get them to spread the word, you might find – and I'm not kidding – within a month, you might find 10,000 people pounding on your blog because of just the way that the social media branches out. But you've got to ask these people to help them. That's I probably forgot that, and I've insinuated that. But asking people to do things, there's not much really wrong with it. I mean, it's somewhat self-serving, but at the same token, you can configure it in a way that helps them help other people. If you like what I'm doing, maybe your friends will like this. Have them take a look, type of thing. Does that make sense?
It does. So do you find, in your experience, those kind of asks, do they work better at like the beginning of a post or at the end of a post, or how does that work best?
Absolutely. You need to put the idea at the very beginning, right at the beginning of the post. Say, hey, you know, we're going to do this. I'd like to know your information on what we're talking about. And here's what I'm thinking. And then ask them again. So in the beginning and in the end, because you want to make sure because sometimes when people see there's a way to make things happen, or, you know, if some people see there's feedback going on, I've seen blogs that look dead. They have readers. There's not a lot of feedback, and one post will have 6,000 to 7,000 threads behind it, because somebody started something and it just kept on rolling. So if you ask them ahead of time and then do it at the end, that's going to help you out.
Okay, cool.
Anything else?
I've actually got a question about that. I know when I first, and I haven't been as active as I should be, but I know when I first started using WordPress, the way that the comment system was set up at the time, basically, if you had a WordPress blog yourself, you could like it, and you could go in and comment anonymously if you didn't have a WordPress blog, but it was kind of a lot of work. Did they ever clean that up so it's easier for people to interact with it other than just like smashing the like on Facebook or share on Twitter buttons?
If you're using your own template and your own WordPress system, there are a plethora of plugins out there, and I can talk about some of those next week that will help you engage with your audience better to make it easier for you to get them and easier for you to make it look like things are happening on your blog. Because a lot of this is very much like, you know, the high school dance or the middle school dance, where, you know, we call them stand arounds, because until somebody starts going, nobody wants to be the first one. So sometimes, yes, it does help to get help, or you've got a great group here with Zarma. I think getting people to co-mingle, and I think putting together something on Zarma that would say, hey, these are these links, you know, please help each other out, put something out there to help get the thing rolling, would make it easier. But I highly recommend, and I might be missing your question. I don't know if you're asking me specifically on the WordPress.org or comm systems, have they made that better? But I'm obviously leaning on saying, you know, have your own blog, that you have your own template that gives you much more control. Am I making sense here for you?
You're making sense. I'll have to go in and kind of look at the settings again. I just know that, yeah, in the beginning when I was taking it a lot more seriously, I had a lot more interaction, and there was a lot more conversation going on, and it did seem to make a difference, and it did seem to drive traffic back, as opposed to, like, a lot of hit and run is what I'm getting right now. Like, I have a reasonable number of hits for somebody who doesn't put much work into it, but a lot of it, as you can look at the site statistics in the apparatus like you were talking about, and it's something like your average person goes there and looks at 1.6 posts before departing. Your average person is a visitor as opposed to a subscriber, and I can look at that and I can see that a lot of it is like hit and run now, where it used to be more of the subscribers coming back and being engaged and whatnot. So
right.
I'd like to get that back. I'd like to take control of it again, I guess. It's kind of gotten out from under me.
Yeah, well, it's definitely something that if you put a little effort into it, you do get some out of it. Sometimes you wonder, am I getting enough out of it? But one other tactic that you can do that is huge is, you know, in the WordPress world, there are blog roles where there are links to people that people sign up and they will get notes on their email anytime somebody posts in this group of blogs. And if you find a blog role out there that is similar to yours, then you should start to participate and get into discussions again. Again, the concept here is befriend the community, become a member, accepted member of the community, then share what you've got. And if you follow those three things, you know, get in, become accepted, then share. Now what happens is you can take, if the blog role has got 10,000 subscribers, if you share, if you have been part of the community, then been accepted, and then you post something back. Oh, by the way, I talked about this on my blog. What do you think? Could you give me some response? Out of that 10,000 people, you might find 6,000-7,000 what might just come right to your blog immediately. And then if you have done enough preparation to make sure that yours is a active blog that people want to talk about in hopes, that's a great way to get your blog membership up. Does that help you out?
Yeah, that makes sense. I got another question, and I'm not sure if you know this too, because I think only people that work for WordPress have the skinny on this, but a long time ago, and this is how I got a lot of subscribers and a lot of hits started, I had a post freshly pressed. They basically take it and they put it on the front page of WordPress. It's there for 2 or 3 days, so anybody who is there sees it. You get a lot of clicks. You get a lot of subscribers that way. Like, is there, like, a secret formula to do that again? Because I got so depressed trying to get that to happen for me again after I had it happen with almost no effort at the beginning. And I feel like I've written much better content after that content, and I'll be damned if I can get any kind of response like that again. So it's a little disheartening, I guess.
Well, look, let me take off my white hat and put on my gray hat here for a second.
Okay.
Absolutely. There's things you can do. There are blogs out on the internet that have got one or two posts that are just, they're hammered with traffic because of some of these methods. When things are new, they get noticed right away because everybody wants to go to the new restaurant in town, and then hopefully it will pick things up. Same thing on Amazon. You get a new product on Amazon. It's out there into new things, but if it doesn't pick up, then it kind of falls in with everybody else, and that's where you're sitting right now. So you could go out on WordPress, and you could publish something. For example, a great example would be this. Let me get you a specific one because I think I can help you with this.
Okay.
A moment. Okay. I just want to sound somewhat intelligent here.
No,
I'm looking
you.
At
That's
your.
My job.
No worries.
I know what I'm talking
okay.
About.
So you could put out right now, today, you could go out tonight and you could put down the Wolf of Discarda of WordPress.org. Bam. Put it out there, post it on the internet, write some great content about the book, put things out there, make it happen. It's going to hit freshly press right away. And then you could say, for more issues, you can drive them back to your place. Or you could say, hey, for a detailed discussion on this, drive them back to your place. So, yes, that's gray, meaning that what I'm doing is I'm putting up a false blog temporarily that's going to drive traffic to my blog. But absolutely, this is how the internet works. Does that help you a little bit?
Yeah, it does. I'm kind of wondering what the black hat looks like now.
Not for public consumption. I'm not going to – yeah, but my point is, absolutely, but that's a great tactic. There is nothing wrong with that because you think about it. Think about when you're looking at all the movies. There is a web page for every single movie that gets released for most movies out there. And they collect those. They get hit right away. And then a year from now, nobody sees those sites. So putting content out there that's going to spice. If you know that when I add in new things to WordPress, I'm going to get on the freshly pressed piece, I can drive some traffic, use that to your advantage. Every time you have something that's newsworthy, make it happen. We use the same thing with press releases. It used to be press releases were very helpful. And these are some topics we'll talk about next week on SEO, but there's a lot of ways you can get things out in the Internet that, when something's new, people tend to look at it, especially on known sites like WordPress or, you know, PDF publishing sites or imagery sites or so forth, that we can spark to bring people back into our place. The subject is, remember when I talked about this, your site is a hub. It's at the very center, and you have the spokes. So you create as many spokes that are driving traffic into your site, and then you use that site to push it out to your social media. But this is a great way to put something else new. Make that site out there. Make sure the content's good. Make sure you've got a good catch on your site. You'll get more traffic.
Thank you.
No worries.
So I have to interject here. We are less than 3 minutes until we're going to be cut off.
Okay, great. No worries.
So, Kevin, you will be here next week to talk about SEO. Do you want to do like an outro? Do you want to do say anything about yourself, invite people to check out By Domino, anything like that?
No, I think the thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put something on Zarmé Press site to put a link to this. I've got a set of slides that work with this and some links to help it to make it easy. So I would say in the next write-up for next week, we'll put a link to that, and I'll put a link to the next one that comes in. And we've already kind of touched on SEO for next week, so I'm hoping that'll pull people in and they'll like seeing it because I think it'll be great.
Awesome. Well, thank you for talking with us.
No, my pleasure, really. I really love talking about this stuff, so thank you so much for having me.
All right, Daniel and B, do you want to do outros one by one?
Sure, I will do an outro. This is B. If you haven't already, I encourage you to check out my novel, Araya. It's a queer fantasy romance that has a lot of plot. If you are interested in elves and magic and a lot of feelings, then it's a book for you. I also just want to give another shout out to my community of diverse creators and diverse readers. I think there's a We Need Diverse Blogs chat on Twitter that's happening tonight. That's another thing that's happening. That's another way that I've been able to grow my blog. So I would love to see any listeners there tonight. And I blog at brsanderswrites.com. So that's my website to direct it back to that.
Thank you. Daniel, you're up.
Okay. Again, Daniel Pike. My website is pikeknight.com. I'm on Twitter at pikeknight. Facebook author page is facebook.com/DanielPikeKnight. I'm easy to find. I'm Googleable. Author of The Wolf of Descartes and Betrayal at Phobos. It is a three-book right now. I'm working on the third one, a science fiction fantasy series that is basically about gamers and hackers saving the universe. So if you're interested in that stuff, my work is available on Amazon, or you can order it off of my website, which will link you right there. And I think that's really everything that I have. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, I will talk to you next week, Kevin. And, yeah, thank you all for being on.
Thank you so much.
Welcome.
It was great. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, folks, we will be here next week with Kevin Marshall to talk about SEO. And, yeah, I'll see you then. Same time, same place.